This is the Sports Reporters.
I'm Mike Lubega, MSNBC and MLB.com.
I'm Robert Wall from HBO's Arliss.
And I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN, and we welcome you to the Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, welcoming our good friend Robert Wall as Mitch Albom, our normal partner, is he's on a holiday in a far-flung corner of this globe.
I think it's a working holiday because the guy, he'll just go anyway. The poor
and
guy.
We wish him well,
more
of
books.
Course. Yeah. We are here, and as always, twice a week, Monday and usually Thursdays, and here we go. Now, yesterday was a big day National Basketball Association as the Eastern Conference Finals got underway. And the Boston Celtics slashed the Milwaukee Bucks, and we can get to that in a minute. But really, the big controversy was out west, where the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors went at it, and the game ended in some sort of controversy, gentlemen, as James Harden put up a long three-pointer in the hopes of tying the game. It did not make it, and the whistle did not blow, much to his consternation. So what do you guys think of the non-call that pretty much decided this game?
I think it was a non-call. First of all, I don't think it was a foul. I very rarely do I find myself agreeing with Draymond Green, okay? But but Harden jumps into defenders. He does. And refs are hip to it now, even though he gets a lot of calls. I said this on Twitter today, Bob and Robert. As great a player as Harden is, he is more theatrical begging for calls than someone playing Premier League football in England, okay? And he tried to do it yesterday. It didn't work. I actually thought Paul got hammered when he collected the rebound.
More controversial.
Yeah. And then it ends with Paul getting teed up. But the point of contention here, the point of contention is, did Harden get fouled trying to tie the game? And in my opinion, he did not get fouled.
I am going to concur with that opinion. When you go to a baseball game, you hear about umpires and pitchers. They say, all you ask for is consistency. Well, they did not call this all game long. It happened all game long, and they did not call it. So why suddenly are you going to call it on the last play of the game, which was, at best, it's a ticky-tack foul.
And he did, Robert, he did jump. He always jumps forward
always.
When he tries to get that call.
Oh, and he's gotten it every now. They'll argue by saying, look, he's done this all year, and all year they called it. But they didn't call it in that game. So I agree with you.
He jumps forward and then falls backwards. He's a master. Look, the guy's a master. The guy is scoring at a rate that we haven't seen since Michael Jordan for a very good reason. And he knows how to get to the line. And he's got a technique. And he's got a style. And he's got this methodology on this three-pointer. But I think I'm making a 3-for-3 here. Now, I have to throw and be a total disclaimer here. He's not my favorite player. I'll say that to be very polite.
I acknowledge
his technical greatness. I acknowledge the numerology of James Harden. But I don't enjoy watching him play. And I'm not alone, I don't think. But that, anyway, I think we are in agreement that. And once again, it just reminded me very much of the Virginia Auburn ending. That game when that shot. You know, first of all, the guy's got to make a difficult shot. The benefit of the doubt. And this is the Bob Ryan school of thought of officiating.
Robert, have you ever heard Mr. Ryan's philosophy? About because I know it the way I know my screen name. Okay,
I have not, but I am willing.
Okay, Bob, would you just briefly share this with Mr.
Robert? It is my contention that at every level of basketball, starting with youth, on an 8-foot basket, that the officials in question before every game should be subjected to a 1-question exam before they are allowed to take the court. That question is, why am I here? And the reason you are here, saith I, is not to demonstrate your profound and intricate knowledge of every jot and tittle of the rule book. Your job is to adjudicate the smooth flow of the game. And it involves judgments, and it does incorporate situations, okay? Anyway, that's why he's here. That's why the referee should be here. And in my opinion, by not blowing the whistle at that moment, those gentlemen understood their function.
And Bob and Robert, okay, I'm reading to you from the ESPN story. Joe Borgia, the NBA's senior vice president of replay and referee operations, told NBA TV that Draymond Green did not foul Harden on the last three attempt because Green was going across not into Harden's path, and Harden, quote, jackknifed his body so his feet made contact with Green. And we don't want to turn this into a tutorial on the side-to-side rule in the NBA, okay? But by no measure did Green foul him. And, Bob, you're right. In the college game, that was a foul in the game. That was absolutely was a foul, okay?
Well, we're going to disagree on that, but I would never have blown that whistle in that moment. That was a desperation.
But in this case,
you know, we have to take into consideration that Harden does make this shot, you know, often.
And he does. But Bob, I was actually not surprised to find out he got fouled on 3-point attempts nearly 100 times this season.
More than any team. Yeah,
nearly 100 times. But because he does get that call so often, and because he does get calls that are not called every single night, now he's saying, wait a minute, I just want a fair chance. Shut up.
Meanwhile, we're burying, you know, the problem with all this is it buries the lead, you know, and the lead is that Kevin Durant is on an ungodly tear.
Michael Jordan.
Such as we've seldom seen in the history of the playoffs.
It's Michael Jordan-esque. It is. It's Michael Jordan.
Or go back to those of us who remember, you know, Jerry West scored 40 points a game in the 1965 finals. But yes, this is the best thing. This is the most Jordan-esque performance we have seen since, including anything LeBron's done. I mean, Durant is at the absolute peak of his powers.
And Robert Wall, here's the thing. And when Durant joined the Warriors, okay, and then we saw the way he played in the playoffs, I remember writing at the time, and Bob Ryan and I discussed this. I said, here's what basically happened to the best team on the planet. They added Michael Jordan. Because the fact of Kevin Durant's career is, at this time of year, he is Michael Jordan.
A couple things. First of all, the question of why am I here, I think should be applied to just about everybody in every profession of every life before they go to work every day. Why am I here?
I'd like producers, perhaps.
Everybody.
Directors?
Everybody. You know, that's number one. Number two is it just me, but when they show a close-up of James Harden with that beard, doesn't it look like Woody Allen's beard in Bananas when he had that phony red beard on around it? It looks like it's going to come off. It looks like it's Velcroed on. There.
Oh, I promised myself I would
try to restrain
myself.
No. Don't talk about beards.
Michael, stop me right now.
No. Walk yourself back from the precipice, okay?
Sorry.
Robert, don't bring up beards. Okay. Don't do it. You're opening yourself up and all of us up to heartbreak. So now, this has nothing to do with Mr. Harden's physical appearance.
Okay.
This has to do with Mr. Harden's style of play, which will likely... I don't know. Giannis will probably win the MVP. It could be Harden. But again, he expected... That was what was clear. He expected that call. But the funny thing was, Chris Paul bitched about it more than Harden did.
Yeah. I wasn't sure he wasn't bitching about that play afterwards, though.
He got hammered.
He did get hammered there. Now, here's the other point. I think the bigger point here is that, isn't it pretty... Are we getting to a point where... This is almost like the old, you know, Bill Russell, Bob Cousy Celtics versus the Elgin Baylor, Jerry West Lakers in the fact that they can't beat this team. Until proven wrong, you gotta, in order to beat the champ, you gotta knock out the champ. And until I see this team do that, I'm not convinced that they're going to win. They're ever going to win. That's just me. That's just my opinion. Does anybody else feel this way?
No.
I worry. I mean, I fear. I'm rooting for the Warriors, but I have a trepidation about the Rockets. If they have one of those games where they shoot 40% from the floor on threes, then they're going to win. But I cling with great glee to the memory of the Game 7 last year when they went 0-27 to conclude the game on threes, you know. And that's always a possibility to be repeated.
And here's the thing. Robert and I had this conversation the other day, Bobby, and I asked Robert the following question. I asked it about the Sixers, but I apply it to the Rockets, okay? Do you ever see them getting the big stop they need in a game like they played yesterday? And even as wonderful as Durant was, and it is clear now that you know, if it wasn't clear before, that he's the primary scorer on this team, even a team that has Steph Curry, you see how deep they are because the to me, the dagger shot yesterday was Steph's three down the stretch.
Oh, it was. Course,
that was just completely changed the game. And you know, I'll use a quote that it's Jeff Van Gundy's quote about Steph Curry, and I love it. It's one of my favorite quotes about the contemporary culture of the NBA. He said, "Steph Curry got over himself a long time ago."
I love that.
It shows how smart Jeff is. But it shows how smart Steph is, okay? Steph follows the old Larry Brown theory about point guards. What is the only stat that matters? Did we win the game? Or L? And that three he made yesterday was, it was almost like he said, Damian Lillard, you got nothing on me when it comes to making shots.
Well, when I saw who was on him, now how that ever happened, you wonder, because there was certainly opportunity for the Rockets, and it just speaks to what you were saying earlier about getting the key stop. How do they wind up with Nene isolated with Curry? Right. When I saw that, I said, uh-oh, this is going to be good. And not that he can't get his shot off, as we know. He can create space and get his shot off as well as anyone from distance, better than anyone in the history of the game, period. Okay? Yep. Right, but Nene, you know he's going to get a shot he wants with Nene. I don't know how the hell that happened.
You know, something else during this game, this was a game the Rockets, could have won. I mean, weren't you surprised at how sloppy the passing on Golden State was in the first half? Almost for the first three quarters of the game.
Even down the stretch, Robert.
Yeah.
Steph made a play. He made a play off of what looked like a high pick and roll, and he threw it right into the defense, and they go the other way. That was a very big play down the stretch in that game. And, yeah, they listen, Robert, we talked about this the other day. The lapses this team has can occasionally be shocking.
But that's how good they are. And
yes,
that's how confident they are at the end. And until somebody knocks them off of the throne, and I don't see LeBron and Kyrie Irving playing against them right now, and I don't even know if that would do it anymore, but they're still the champs. They're still the champs.
And Bob, praise must be given out, and properly so, to Draymond. Draymond played great yesterday. Draymond, who's had a very sketchy season for great stretches of the season, 14-9-9, and defended Harden as well as you can defend him in a moment that important.
He's so street tough. He's just a tough guy. He is. And the versatility, no question. He's an incredible asset. Remember, he is. Just it. They're a big four. They still have the best 1-4 in the game. The 1-4 is the best. The other teams have deeper teams, but, they have, and they do, including the Celtics, including the Celtics. But nobody's got a 1-4.
And Robert and Bob, okay? Now, a pageant that I not only hate now, but have hated my whole life, loving the NBA. And Robert, well, you probably don't even know this. I broke into the newspaper business in New York covering the Knicks. I was a beat writer, just like my hero, Mr. Ryan, was, okay? The lobbying of the refs from game to game is already begun. It will go on every single off day post game from now until the end of the season. The politicking in the media is even more prevalent now because there's more media now.
I would guess, I once sat next to Bobby Knight at a baseball game, St. Louis Cardinals, and we were talking about forgetting what you think of Bobby Knight. He knows a little bit about basketball. Yeah. And he once said to me, he goes, "Here's the thing is, you've got to be good enough mentally and physically to play through bad officiating in order to win a championship."
Yeah.
He says, a lot of times you'll have the talent, but you lose it, a la Don Denkinger's call in the game six.
I was at the game.
I mean, they always say, oh, it cost them the series. It didn't cost you the series. It was game six, number one, and it was the first out of the ninth inning, okay? You got a man on it. You got a one-run lead.
They were going to win the World Series.
No, they were not.
Minutes later.
No, excuse me. It's game six. It's game six.
It was game seven. They were up three games.
No. It was game six. And it was a guy. So he blew a call at first base. Okay. There's a man. You got a one-run lead. There's a guy at first base with one out, with no outs in the ninth. Get three outs. The game's over.
Robert, but that's like saying that the call wasn't all that big against the Saints because they still could have stopped him in overtime. The fact is, should have been in overtime.
It wasn't game six. It's not the same thing. How they and what happened on game seven? Did they mentally implode? Andujar? Do you remember Andujar?
Ryan, help me out here.
Game
Mike,
six.
You're
sorry.
On your own on this one. I mean, you know, game seven was a disaster. It's
mentally,
like
they weren't tough enough.
Hey, the Red Sox had a what was their lead in game seven after Buckner?
Same exact thing.
That's
game
nothing
six.
Lead. Thank you
game
very much.
Six.
So, I think the man speaketh with great wisdom here, Michael.
Okay, run that up the flagpole in St. Louis and see who salutes. All right, let's go to the other game. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent and time, keeping in one unified system. All with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more about Kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that actually works. Okay, the other game is, and we've all been talking about this for about a month and wondering whether the Celtics had found themselves, okay? And as Gordon Hayward got better, as Kyrie Irving seemed to become as comfortable in his surroundings as he is going to be for as long as he is going to be a Celtics. Bob Ryan, I'll start with you, Bob Ryan. That was a very impressive performance yesterday on the road against the team that won more games than anybody else in the league this year.
Yes, it was. They had a week to prepare. And I think one of the keys that you saw yesterday, and this is going to be a constant theme, and one reason why the good thing about this otherwise ridiculous spacing of the games, which means that game seven, if it is to take place, would be 2 weeks from tonight, I know, isn't that a horrible... Al Horford.
Yep.
Al Horford,
yep.
You saw how valuable he is. People here, you know, he got disparaged. I won't even say who it was because I like the guy very much. But a local commentator who should have known better labeled him Average Al 2 years ago. And that's kind of stuck with some people. He just didn't get it. Al Horford is immensely important to this team. And in this particular series, he's absolutely vital because of his ability to, I won't say to do what, to contend with. I won't say over dominate or frustrate, but to contend with it, to annoy, offset to some degree the Greek Freak. And then you turn on the other side, he facilitates the offense. He can hit the three when he's open. He knows where to go for the open spot. He is one of the smartest players I've ever seen in the Celtic uniform. He would have been a fit with any of the groupings of the any of the great groups of the Celtics in the past. So anyway, Mike, you're illusions, right? We wondered, it took them 6 months, guys.
Yeah.
6 months
yes.
to get this thing worked out, which included Hayward's painstaking return to physical and mental form. And keep in mind that Brad Stevens had nailed this one from the start. Even though he did overplay him in the beginning, I think he'd have to agree he shouldn't have played him as much as he did in the beginning. He wasn't quite ready. But he did say all along that he will be better in game 20 than he was in game 1, that he'll be better in game 40 than 20, 60 than 40, and 80 than 60.
Yep.
And bang, here he is. He is finally back, and he's playing free and comfortable. He doesn't worry. He doesn't have to worry about, oh my God, if I do this move, what's going to happen to my ankle? How am I going to? No. He's playing basketball. And he's playing with good players.
Before Robert jumps in, he constantly referenced, and I did not see it, a game against the Heat where he said that it was liberated, that he felt like himself again. And I forget where that came.
Yeah, I can't identify. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure there has to come a moment when you're that level of an athlete and you're coming from a devastating injury and when you finally get through that, crash through that barrier. You know, the combination, the mental thing is worse than the physical thing and that stage. And he finally got there. And I told you he was frustrated, missing shots that he used to make, missing opportunities, being a step slow on defense, all that stuff. Weighed on his mind, I'm sure. And he wanted to contribute. He knows they're looking at him. He's getting this huge salary. He was a ballyhooed addition to the team. One good thing that's come through, the team, they liked him. You could tell. There was never a question that they didn't like the man. They didn't like him as a teammate. But there were questions. There was some resentment earlier in the year. I know there was on that team by the fact that he was getting unwarranted playing time. But as it turned out now, well, we're here. And then Kyrie, whole other topic. We could do the whole thing on Kyrie. But the fact of the matter is that you're seeing a combination of scoring and assisting that is a, frankly, a consummate point guard at the moment.
I would bring up one point that it was pretty apparent to me. You know, we always talk about making the adjustments, and sports is a game of adjustments. It seemed to me that the coaching staff, Brad Stevens, did a much better job at halftime, because that was a one-point game,
52-50.
And yet the second half, they made the adjustments, and the other team did not adjust. Now, again, and they blew them out. Now the key is, now comes game two, and you have to make the adjustments to the adjustments. So I'm curious about that, and I couldn't agree with you more about Horford. You know, when it comes this time of year, you love to see players, and to a we forgot to mention somebody else in the Golden State game, and that was Iguodala, who I just adore. You know, but these guys who, you know, Robert Horry used to do this every now and then for the Lakers. I mean, comes out. I mean, he wasn't the player these guys are, but boy, clutch time, he was there. I just enjoy those guys stepping up, those kind of players.
Well, Robert, here's the thing, and I don't know if I've had this conversation with you. I've had it with Bob plenty of times. You don't always know that a winning player in college is going to be a winning player in the
pros.
That's true. Carmelo, as a freshman at Syracuse, seemed to be evolved a basketball player with a sense of the game as any 18-year-old kid I'd ever seen, and then he became what he became.
Absolutely.
Okay, but Al Horford. Robert, Bob knows this. I took my three sons to like 15 Final Fours. That was our big thing every year. Okay. The most complete team I have seen in college basketball in 25 years was Al Horford's Florida team, coached by Billy Donovan. Okay. They had everything. Lee Humphrey, the dead eye shooter. They had, Joakim Noah. Tareen Green. On and on and on and on. Corey Brewer. And it was like a classic college basketball team. But I thought he was the essential member of that team. I think he's an essential member of this team. And Bob, what was interesting to me yesterday is we see what the rotation is now. Stevens played six guys for 30 minutes or more yesterday, Hayward being the sixth guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And if somebody had told you going in that they were going to survive a game in which Jason Tatum scored 4 points and still win by a lot, you would have laughed. But this team has found it's, dare I say, it's the essence that we thought it was going to have at the start of the year.
It took 6 months, but no, you're right. It's, and this is the dream scenario of any team in any sport, is to be playing your best at the right appropriate moment as you enter the playoffs, and that's exactly what they're doing. It was there were so many.
And the big kid from Milwaukee did 7 for 21, 22 points. They'll sign up for that for the rest of the series.
Oh yeah, and it's not going to be like that every night. And this. I love what Brad Stevens said after the game, too. He said, we are going to have to be great Tuesday night, and we know that.
Yep.
And I think it sounds like, yes, you have to make that assumption. I mean, Milwaukee did win 60 games, so they're very much for real, and he's very much for real. And they will, and Robert, you're so right. The playoffs, with the great fascination, I learned this, firsthand, oh my God, almost 50 years ago, and that is, the adjustment thing. We're here on the 45th anniversary of one of the most exciting and fulfilling experiences of my professional life, which was the 1974 NBA Finals in Milwaukee, in which it was a battle of so many things, including a battle of the wits between two brilliant coaching staffs, Larry Costello and young Hubie Brown on the one side, and Tom Heinsohn and John Killalea on the other. And it was point counterpoint in that regard, right down to the seventh and final game. And I learned so much basketball.
And Bob,
from that experience.
Who came off the bench to be one of the heroes of that game for the Boston Celtics?
Well, I would think it would be a guard from USC, if I
recall. Recently minted Hall of Famer, and who's a good friend of both of ours.
And the lead went from 17-3 in the late third, and Paul Westphal drove, I can see it to this day, the baseline right to left with a great left-hand reverse layup and started the Celtics on the way back to finally winning by 15. Yes, and let's take our mutual congratulations to our mutual friend, Paul Westphal, who is coming off being cited as a member of the College Basketball Hall of Fame in Kansas City last fall, and now in September he will be honored in Springfield, Mass. As a member of the Smith
Robert Wall. Bob Ryan will have a parting shot on his dear friend John Havlicek in a moment, but we all should have a conversation about John. who, you know, when I've learned of his passing the other night, I said this and I believe it. This is one of the, not just one of the great players, not just one of the great Celtics, but one of the great gentlemen in the history of sports. And, you know, everybody knows about, you know, Russell's Celtics, and Russell went in 11 and 13 years. But John Havlicek not only redefined the role of a sixth man, which was overdone because, as Mr. Auerbach always said, it's not who starts the game, it who finishes. But, oh my God, both of you, I will just say this. He gets too often lost.
Yes.
And in the list of the greatest player the NBA has ever produced.
Well, he definitely gets lost when you talk about all-time teams and everything, but if you talk, because usually they only talk about five people. You know, so who's your top five? Who's your all-time five? But then if you ask the question, okay, that's your all-time five, who's your sixth man? And the, right. When if you ask that question, if I, that's when the whole question changes. That's, and also,
it's why Gordon Hayward ought to be proud the way he's being used by Brad Stevens.
Well, that's, today's a different time, but the how, you know, John Havlicek. That's, and also it's a passing of an era. You know, this is, you know, I'm old enough. You guys are old enough. Havlicek is one of the last few, and Russell, of course. But Havlicek symbolized an era. I would say, I don't want to say more innocent, but maybe it was more innocent that time. And it's like the line in Field of Dreams. It represented all that was good, Ray. you know, Havlicek is special. Even if you hated the Celtics, I mean, if you're a Los Angeles Laker fan, you had to respect Havlicek. You know, Havlicek transcended. He's one of the few special people.
Well, I certainly am going to echo everything I've heard there, and he was.
Bob,
so
tell the story about Cleveland and just the way it epitomized for both of us how John existed in another time.
John was meticulous, and John was to say the least, and precise, and eminently logical. John was the most thoroughly logical. The game, the world just made sense. Okay, Robert, John, in 1976, in the first game of the playoffs against the Buffalo Braves, John Havlicek sustained an injury. It was a torn plantar fascia. Left foot. And that's the first time that any of us had ever heard of that particular injury. Now, of course, you hear about it all the time, but this is, you know, okay. So the prescribed treatment that he was supposed to undergo in order to help
pretty
him
complicated,
continue,
wasn't it, Bob? Pretty technical.
Soak your foot in a tub of in ice for 3 hours a day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So John Havlicek, being John Havlicek, said, well, if 3 hours a day is good, then six must be twice as good.
Of course.
A. B. In order to facilitate this, he purchases a dishpan, turquoise, I can assure you, a turquoise dishpan at a local, you know, 5 and 10 kind of place, carries it around. Michael was and I traveled the playoffs together that year. And Michael saw it firsthand, and John would go at night and, you know, on the, he'd have his, and he would load up with, as he called it, 2 hondo handfuls of ice. Oh, yes. He had a very sly sense of humor, John did. And we would sit there and watch television in his hotel room while he was soaking his
with
foot.
Us! With us,
hours,
Robert!
With us! The two of us for hours 4, 5, and 6 of the 3 hours that he was supposed to do it. And he was able to nurse himself through those playoffs carrying this turquoise dishpan around from Buffalo to Cleveland to Phoenix. He didn't have a transcendent playoffs because he was impaired, but he was, you know. Oh, did I mention that he played 53 minutes in the triple overtime game at age 36 with the torn plantar fascia?
Robert, Mr. Ryan and I both witnessed firsthand one of the great basketball games ever played, which was game 5 of that series, 128-126 for the Boston Celtics in Boston Garden on the craziest damn Friday night of basketball.
Absolutely.
And John Havlicek, as you might imagine, was stellar. And hadn't, by the way, Bob, John made the shot that prompted Westfall calling the timeout that they didn't have so that they could advance the ball from half court.
He makes a leaning, banked
left 18, side, right?
Left 18 footer. I said it was a Nolan Ryan fastball off the glass somehow. And that created the lead, and that's when Paul Westfall, in his sagacious manner, figured out that he checked and see that they didn't have any timeouts. But if they were to call a timeout, there would be a technical foul, and they would be able to advance the ball to midcourt. Which is, and he told John McLeod this. John McLeod did it. JoJo White, oh boy, he makes the two free throws of us, and that's when Gar Hurd hit that moonshot to tie it up and send us into a third overtime, and then sending, among other things, a fan onto the court to attack Richie Powers, the referee. Oh, it was some night. All right, that's for sure.
You guys, and I love hearing these stories like this. Where does you figure Havlicek rank among all-time Boston sports heroes?
Well, we have a Rushmore, and I'm afraid the Rushmore is so inviolate at the moment. But I think the Rushmore, chronologically speaking, you know, would be Williams, Russell, Orr, and now Brady. The next tier would include both
John.
Bird and Havlicek. There's no question about that. And then probably
Bird, Ortiz, Havlicek,
yeah.
And who would be the fourth?
Well, you know, it could be, you know,
the other side of the mountain, Rushmore.
Ray Bourque, I would think, would be a very suitable nominee.
Can I? Okay, well, he's not a player, but if you'd say Belichick. Or our back.
Oh, well, we're talking about
our back. I mean,
well, yeah, but that's a whole.
But that's, you know, not
a player.
About yeah.
Players. Okay. Well, what? I'm glad. Let's get you raise a subject, and I know that people are going to say, they have said it in advance, you're just a Boston guy, and you're biased, and you're a homer. All right. No, you know, you're going to live with that. I live
sure,
in Boston.
Sure.
The standards of individual all-around excellence among non-centers. You got to take the centers such as they once existed and put them on the side. That's their own. Job description, their own skill set, and you know they it's different. Okay, but among people that are asked to dribble, shoot, pass, defend, play the entire game up and down the floor, we're talking about the all-time great players in his time. The two unquestioned standards of excellence were Oscar Robertson and Jerry West. And John Havlicek is not often outside of Boston thought of in those same terms. I am here to say, as somebody that in the last 5 years of a period of time from roughly 1969 to 1974, when Oscar was in the last 5 years of a brilliant career, and Jerry was wound up retiring in 73. They were both over the mountain. They had both truly passed their peak, though they remained outstanding players. But their greatest moments were behind them. John Havlicek was better than both of them. John Havlicek guarded both of them as a guard, and of course then was an all-pro forward. He was better than both of them. He was the best. He ranks. So when you're talking about all-time players, he should definitely be included on the same level as Oscar Robertson and Jerry West. And that is not a biased statement. That is an informed statement.
And before we close the book on the great John Havlicek, who passed away last week, Ryan, would you agree that no one ever played a better game almost exclusively with his offhand than Havlicek did at Madison Square Garden when basically his right arm had become useless?
Yes, he sustained a major injury to his shoulder, getting caught in a pick between Bill Bradley and Dave DeBuscher in Game 3 of the 1973 Eastern Conference Finals. He missed all of Game 4. That's another story entirely. He comes back in Game 5. His right arm is dangling fairly uselessly. He scores 18 points. He has four of his six field goals were left-handed, and they win this game, and they also come back and win the sixth game. By the seventh game, the Knicks were able to assault. He had nothing left, but yes, it was one of the most remarkable. I got to tell you a quick story, Michael, for your benefit particularly, but you'll love, Robert, you'll love it. I was talking with Paul Westfall last week about John, and as you, he said, John, ordinarily, we were just talking about left hand, John never would use his left hand in the normal course of action. John was a right-handed guy all the way. Yeah. He was not noted for his ambidexterity. Paul Westfall, meanwhile, and I nominate him as the starting guard on the all-time all-ambidexterity team.
Completely ambidextrous.
He was absolutely astonishing with his left hand as a right-hand player. Okay. We said one day in practice, I don't know how it got initiated, that John wanted to play a one-on-one game left-handed. The two of them will have to shoot only left-handed. And Paul said, and he beat me. He said, how did he do that? And then John said to him, we're never playing this game again.
One quick question about the Celtics, but don't let go. What is with the Celtics uniform? I turned it on yesterday. I'm saying, you know, there are very few things that are consistent in life that you look forward to, and you have a feeling of safety and security and warmth and tradition. And then I see the Celtics uniforms yesterday. Oh. I go, why? Well, I guess Robert, they want to, go ahead.
You are not preaching to a barbershop quartet, nor are you preaching to a standard choir. You are preaching to the Mormon Tabernacle Choir with me when you bring up this particular subject. Their uniforms are barf bag specials for me, and I can't deal with it. Absolutely. This is, Mike, this is if the Yankees suddenly were wearing tie-dye. You know? It's just, Robert, you are so right. It's execrable, but this is marketing.
Yes,
this is marketing, and the whole world's just in the hand of the marketers.
As we close the book on this discussion of John Havlicek, I will tell you what our friend Paul Westfall said when he learned of John's passing. He said, if he can die, anybody can die. Oh. And so God rest the soul of John Havlicek. All right, let's just do a few minutes, Ryan, because you didn't get to weigh in on this. We're still in a bit of a state of shock in New York, and all those who grew up loving the New York Giants with the pick of Daniel Jones, the quarterback, with the sixth pick. And I will tell you what made me even more furious over the weekend is Dave Gettleman, the general manager who made the pick, saying, I know for a fact that two teams were going to take him if I took the kid from Kentucky, linebacker, at six, and he wasn't going to be there at 17. Here's my question for Mr. Gettleman. Whoever tells the truth about the NFL?
Yeah, really?
Who gave you this information, Dave? What fact are you operating off of? Because Daniel Jones absolutely would have been there at number 17 if he had just waited. And somehow he looked at this guy and did see the next, forget Eli Manning, the next Peyton Manning, the next John Elway, the next Tom Brady. It's really quite remarkable.
He's rather smug, isn't he, Mr. Gettleman?
I've got a plan. Don't you worry about it. I don't have to tell you what my plan is.
He acts like
he's Vince Lombardi.
I was aware of Daniel Jones' existence on this earth, that he was the quarterback at Duke. But beyond that, I certainly entered the draft and preseason, if you will, with no opinion whatsoever about him, nor did I think that he was going to be involved in the upper echelons of
the rush now to prop this guy up. I saw a story in the New York Post today. What Jay Billis likes the kid. Oh, good. Oh, good. Because
he's a dookie.
No, as Alex, as one of my sons said the other night, he said, wait a minute. I thought the Knicks were the team that was going for the big guy from Duke.
Well, no, I just know that they had the acute need for the pass rusher. The pass rusher was there. But this is, as we all know, this has a lot to do with, Eli too. I mean, and how about this idea? How long that Jones might be sitting? Did not Gettleman throw out this thing about, well, Aaron Rodgers sat 3 years behind Brett Favre, which is not what the New York fans want to hear.
No.
They bought themselves some time to get the fans to lay. I'm sorry. I wish no ill will to this kid. I hope he turns out to be everything that he's supposed to be. But the idea that he was the sixth best player in this draft is preposterous. And Mike, they had a chance to walk away with Josh Allen and him and didn't do it.
Mike, let's give you one more chance before we really slide fully into baseball season and NBA and NHL playoff seasons to address the conceivable juxtaposition of the New York Jets quarterback playing in the same edifice over the next 15 years as whoever it is that will be calling signals for the New York football Giants.
Okay. All right. Okay. Mr. Wall, okay, just as I said to you, I know Ryan's theory about refs the way I know my screen name, okay? He knows what I'm about to tell you as well as I know his theory about refs. And it is this. If the Jets are right about Sam Darnold, and I believe the Jets are right about Sam Darnold, then I don't care how great Saquon Barkley is. The Giants were wrong not to take Sam Darnold, because I will ask the question that I continually ask, and I will ask it again today. How many running backs, how many immortal running backs ran their team to the Super Bowl? Don't count. Emmitt Smith is different. He was playing with Troy and Michael.
Yeah.
And Terrell Davis did it one time for John Elway. Okay. All I'm saying is if guys like Barkley can run you to the Lombardi Trophy, how come Barry Sanders didn't?
You are 100,000% correct. And I think this is also a question of generations. Dave Gettleman comes from an older generation. Jim Brown, you know, Jim Taylor, you know, the big running back.
No, that's why he just drafted a big stand-in-the-pocket quarterback instead of looking for around for a Patrick Mahomes.
Okay, I don't believe a word about what I'm about to say. Okay, so let me qualify that. But, okay, I'm going to, just to stand defiant and push back, if somebody's told you that, boy, you drafted this guy Russell Wilson in the sixth pick of the first round, really? Really? Nobody had him better than a second or third round pick? Now, like I said, I don't believe a word of it, but I'll give this guy a wait and see. Now, here's what the bigger thing to me that took
off. Prepared to wait a long time.
Like I said, I don't believe it. Here's the thing about it that gets to me. It seems to me that this happened with Rex Ryan and the Jets, too. Both of them took good looking. They took quarterbacks that fit the profile, as I like to say. They took this good looking quarterback for New York. They watched him. I mean, Mark Sanchez. And now you got this guy. It's like they look like they want to be the face of the team. This is the guy we want. Well, let's talk about talent. Let's talk about other things. But it seems to me that they fit the profile is what they went for.
And Brian, Robert, here's the other thing. They're dealing from a point of view that begins in the past, okay? Yeah, he looks the part. He could be another Eli. But look around the sport. You're not looking for Eli's now.
No.
You're looking for Bakers. You're looking for Patrick Mahomes. You're probably going to be looking for Kyler Murray. And look at the frame of reference. Aaron Rodgers. That happened 10 years ago.
And Aaron Rodgers
the game has
run.
Evolved and changed since then. Oh, my God. Don't. Oh, God. This is a nightmare. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me, because if it doesn't confuse me, it's not going to confuse you. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company, of course, is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, damn it, I'm out of time. All right, let's go to the national pastime. Let's move on to the national pastime and spend a little time on baseball. Bob, when are the Red Sox going to start saying, oh, it's still early?
They're, I don't know.
They're 11-17, yeah. Robert.
I know. You know, the old Yogi line, it gets late early out there.
Yes.
And the Red Sox, I think, had better take it very seriously that it's late. There's no excuses any longer. They need to play better. They just simply need to play better. And they have not been able to sustain anything.
They've won one series. Bob, they've won one series.
They have won one series, Michael. It was on the road. They have not won a series at home. Here we go. We're entering May on Monday, on Wednesday, and they have not won a series at home. That is an astonishing thing, you know. And I'll tell you this, having just witnessed the Tampa Bay, they can pitch.
Yeah.
And take them seriously. Those 90 wins last year were not a fluke, and they're serving notice to the Red Sox and the Yankees. It's too bad that, you know, nobody cares. God,
well, the New York Yankees, Mr. Wall,
I
call them, the split squad Yankees, are rolling, having a festival of bad teams on the West Coast.
Oh, right do now. They ever. I watch. I'm live out here, you know, right now. But watching the Angels, who are fair, at least the Giants are horrible.
Oh,
there's going to be a fire sale. By the way, Bob, what do you think of this thought? I was playing with this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Posey to the Red Sox. You know, if you're going to start cleaning house, and they have to, they got to get rid of
Add payroll. They can't add any more payroll, though, Robert.
Ooh, I mean, yeah, I mean, they
okay,
gotta,
okay.
Know,
I thought that was a good piece, though.
It's nice, and he'd like Fenway and all that, but their payroll, they can't be. They have to fix it.
No,
with
good
what
point.
Got.
Good point. I didn't think about that.
And Robert, you know, I said to Bob before we started today, I wrote a column about this over the weekend. I thought to myself, well, with the guys that the Yankees are running out there, one of the reasons that they're doing well has to be with the boppers on the sideline. They're not as much a swing and miss team.
That's right.
Guess what? It's not true.
No,
they are striking out at basically the same rate they did a year ago at this point in the season and hitting the same amount of home runs. That's one. And I said, well, the starting pitching then must be a lot better than it was a year ago. Nah, it's pretty much the same. The bullpen, what they have, and again, they have been entertaining and fun and gritty and grinders, okay? You know what they've been helped by the most? Their schedule.
Yeah.
They have paid a pillow fight of a schedule. The only real team they have played so far are the Houston Astros, who swept them. Other than that, it's been White Sox, Orioles, Tigers. The other teams they played are like 40 games under 500.
Michael, the other day I was in Atlanta, and I showed this, just for the hell of it, and I showed this, the Yankee box score to someone who, I said, if you can identify the last three guys in this lineup, you are, in fact, the editor of Baseball America.
It's the truth.
And, you know, this was, it happened to be Urshela
Talkman,
how do I pronounce it,
Ford,
Mike?
And Wade.
How do I pronounce it? Talkman, right?
Talkman.
And Wade, yeah. It's amazing. And by the way, I have been around for several decades watching baseball, and I never thought that I would live long enough to see Brett Gardner bat third in a Yankee lineup.
It's amazing. Another thing about the Red Sox that would concern me, you mentioned Sale. Well, I mean, and look at the number two starter who's out now. You know, these don't bode well. I do have to add one thing, though. Be here on the West Coast. It is, you know, we've always talked about the best player in baseball, you know, has been playing in Los Angeles. Well, yeah, he is, but he's not on the Angels right now.
No, it's Cody.
No.
I mean, this guy is first. Do you know what he's first in average runs, RBIs, home runs, on-base percentage, slugging. Do you know his batting average is .427, which is 71 points better than the second place hitter? 71 points.
His OPS is like Bonds and Ruthian put together. It's 1.413 right now.
And people forget this about Cody Bellinger, and I've written about this spring, and I bring it up again today. He had an off year last year, and if he had had this kind of year last year, they might have won the World Series.
If they played him, they might have had the World Series. If they didn't platoon him, they might have won the World Series.
Well, but he was getting platooned for a reason, I think. he was having a sketchy year. And before we leave baseball, just let me say this. There's a reason why teams sometimes overpay on free agents, because they're not just buying talent, they're buying hope. And my frame of reference right now is the San Diego Padres, okay? And I'm not saying that Manny Machado is having a Bellinger-like season. He's not. But that's why they bought him. And right now, they're in second place, and I don't think they're going to stay there. Maybe they will. They're two games behind the Dodgers in the standings, one behind in the loss column. That's how you start to put yourself back on radar in baseball.
Exciting team. I see them. I watch them a lot. Very exciting young team. This young talent they got, and Tatis got hurt yesterday, but he's. They have a very exciting young team. They need pitching, but.
But Robert, you said the other day the NFL draft is the real currency is hope. That free agency, sometimes that is the currency of free agency in baseball, even if you got to spend $300 million to get it.
True.
It is time for our parting shots, and I'll tell you what. I'll start off, followed by Mr. Wall, and then we will conclude with Mr. Ryan today.
Now, parting shots.
Kareem Hunt, ex-Kansas City Chief, is now a Cleveland Brown, despite the fact that he will be suspended from the first eight games of the Brown season. Why? Because of a video that surfaced last year, one that showed Hunt assaulting a woman and then kicking her when she was down in a Cleveland hotel room. Lobby. Now it is another star Chiefs player who may be on his way to what the NFL calls its exempt list. But for the time being, Tyreek Hill has been suspended from all team-related activities because of an audio tape this time, one in which Hill is heard discussing the abuse of his son. Hill also tells his fiance that she should be, quote, terrified, end quote, of him. We don't know the whole story of how that little boy suffered a broken arm and whether Hill or the fiance was responsible. The audio tape, though, is terrifying enough. But what's really terrifying is that two star players last season on a team that thought it was going to win the Super Bowl, have found themselves in trouble like this. We saw what Hunt did. Hopefully, we'll eventually learn the truth about Tyreek Hill's son. For now, though, what we learn all over again in the NFL is that it is still populated by a whole bunch of very slow learners.
Like many of you, I watched the NFL draft with all of its excitement, tribalness, and second-guessing. But when it comes to the NFL, there is no second-guessing. If you play long enough, your long-term prospects are guaranteed. Football players are today's gladiators, and like gladiators, once you go into the ring, there's a better-than-average chance something bad can happen. I say that because between rounds of the draft this week, I watched a 30 for 30 documentary about the number 5 pick in the 1990 draft. His name was Junior Seau. Seau, who played for 20 seasons, was a ferocious linebacker, 10-time Pro Bowler, and eventually a Hall of Famer. Oh, yes. And during the 20 years he played, he also developed CTE, a concussion-based brain damage syndrome. And what started out as one of the nicest guys in sports turned very dark, and at the age of 43, shot and killed himself. So it was bittersweet turning back to the pageantry of the draft and watching young men who seem immortal now celebrate with their families as their names were called and marching to the podium in celebration for achieving their lifelong dream. And as they did, I was reminded of the famous quote by General George S. Patton, "All fame is fleeting."
If you never saw John Havlicek play, the problem is I can't explain him to you for a very simple reason. You'd need some sort of contemporary frame of reference. And the truth is, there aren't any. No one else has led the league in minutes played while running what seemed like the equivalent of two marathons every single game. That's part A. Part B is that I'm not sure which contemporary superstar athlete in any sport had such universal respect for his graciousness, courtesy, and sheer humility. John Havlicek was the favorite athlete of his time among countless other great athletes. And please don't get caught up in this great sixth man stuff. Yes, he started out as the greatest sixth man in basketball history before or since. But that was a winning strategy only the Celtics of the 60s could employ. By 1968 and 1969, pay attention to this, please. John Havlicek was playing in 13 finals games while being on the floor for 627 of a total 629 minutes. I repeat, 629 total minutes, 627 John Havlicek played. So much for, quote, load management, unquote. Ugh, don't make me barf. Now, so trust me when I tell you, John Havlicek was special in many ways.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. I was so glad that Ryan was able to do a valediction on his friend John Havlicek today. We are here most Mondays and Thursdays. We are lucky to have our friend Robert Wall pinch hit when Mitch is on the road. We will be back on Thursday with a lot more to talk about with the NBA playoffs, which have been endlessly fascinating so far, and we ain't even near the finish line yet. You can find us where you get your podcasts. You can find us on the Stitcher platform. Again, we are happy to be continuing a tradition that began an awful long time ago on Sunday mornings on television with ESPN. So for our friend Robert Wall, for my dear friend Bob Ryan, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again on Thursday.